Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from the Rocky Mountain town of Crested Butte, Colorado. I'm your host, Mark Troutman, CFP. This educational, personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. After publishing a few lengthy episodes recently, I thought I would throw one in here that's a little short and sweet. I wanted to talk about the idea of accessing funds if you decide to retire early, specifically before the age of 59 and a half. As many of you know, most retirement accounts have a penalty for withdrawals if you do so before you turn age 59 and a half. In most cases, that's a 10% penalty. When I retired, I was the age of 50. That was in 2015. So I had about a 10-year runway before I was going to be able to access a majority of the assets we had accumulated, which were in tax-deferred accounts subject to that penalty of 10% prior to age 59 and a half. Before I retired, I started thinking about, well, how are we going to pay for things with our assets without having to pay this penalty? So we had to start thinking a little bit in advance of that time. And so what I did is I created a cash flow projection for our needs for this interim period, basically from the age of 50 to 60, which is a 10-year window. It's a fairly lengthy time frame. That's why I also talk today with many people about the value of having assets in various tax buckets. And those three tax buckets would include the maybe taxable bucket, the always taxable bucket, and the never taxable bucket. And just to rewind a little bit, when we started saving for retirement at a relatively young age, we weren't thinking about any of this stuff. We just were told, save in your 401k. At the time, it was traditional. There wasn't even Roth availability at the time. And you just stuff it away. And when you retire, you'll have assets to live on. Well, we weren't thinking about this idea of retiring early. And once we started seeing that that was an option, we started to have to come up with a plan for how are we going to pay for life prior to age 59 and a half, when a lot of our money was tied up in these always taxable accounts. And for us, it was about, I want to say, 80% of our assets were in always taxable. So like I said, when I talk to people today, I explain the value of having money in maybe taxable, and that would include things like your regular checking account, any savings accounts, and regular brokerage accounts. And the reason it's maybe taxable is because certainly the money in your checking account isn't taxable. It's just money sitting there. Same with your savings accounts. And brokerage accounts, in many cases, well, certainly the principal that you contributed to those accounts is not taxable because it's already been taxed. Even gains, depending on your income tax bracket, may be taxed at zero. So for instance, if you have long-term capital gains and dividends and they fit within your 10 or 12% bracket, and you do not have income that makes you exceed those brackets, they are subject to a 0% long-term capital gains and qualified dividend tax rate. So you could potentially even have earnings that are taxed at zero in a brokerage account if you manage your income such that you fall into the 10 and 12% bracket with all of your income. And then there's the never taxable bucket, which would include things like Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks, Roth 403bs, or any other Roth type account. Those are assets that the contributions went in after tax. And in some cases, you can access those funds before age 59 and a half. Not all of them, but some of them. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then you have the always taxable bucket, which is where a majority of our assets were. And that is your traditional IRA, traditional 401k, traditional 403b, things of that nature. And so we had this issue in that we didn't have a lot of money in our maybe taxable and never taxable, and a lot of money in always taxable. Once I started to think about the idea of retiring early, we created this cash flow projection and plan for how are we going to access funds as we need them. And so we started to focus on building up assets in our savings accounts, in our brokerage account, and in other options that were available to us. One of those was my wife's 457 plan. She worked for a local municipal government that had a 401A plan, which is very much like a 401K in that there is a set contribution to that by the employee. I believe it was 8% of pay. And then there was a set contribution by the employer of a relatively similar amount. In addition to the 401A plan, that employer offered a 457 plan. And the 457 plan is a deferred compensation plan. It has similar contribution limits as a 401k, for example, or 401a in her situation, but it's not in conjunction with that. So in 2024, for example, you can contribute $23,000 to a 401k, which is also the same limit for a 401a, for example, and an additional $23,000 to a 457. So prior to her stopping work, she contributed the maximum she could to her 457 plan with the understanding that it would become available to us once she separated from service, because a 457 plan has this special exemption that there is not a 10% penalty if you are under 59.5 to access the funds in that account, provided that you separate from service. That's the only stipulation. And this is a plan that is available to many municipal government employees, local government employees, state government employees, oftentimes school districts, things like that. So it's a great plan if you have access to it. Unfortunately, she did. And we made full use of that plan and being able to contribute to it. Her plan came in two flavors, Roth and traditional, but we felt that it would be better for her to contribute to the traditional amount and get the tax deduction with the contributions, knowing that once we were accessing the funds in that account, we would be in a lower tax bracket, so it would be advantageous to pay the tax upon distribution as opposed to upon contribution, which would be the case for the Roth version of the 457. So she had a traditional 457 plan that she contributed to. We also had Roth IRAs. We each had Roth IRAs. There were 6 years where we could make contributions. We may even have done the backdoor Roth one or two of those years, but we were able to get 6 years of contributions into each of our Roth IRAs. And that was about $40,000 each for us. And we also knew that we would have access to those because everyone that has a Roth IRA can access their contributions at any time without penalty, without tax, because the contributions have already been taxed. And that's just one of the stipulations of the Roth IRA. So we knew that was advantageous to have that money in that account, and we would be able to access that as well. We also did do some Roth conversions. We had done one in 2010. In 2010, there was a special rule that allowed for you to make a conversion in that year and spread the tax over, I believe it was 2 years, instead of having to pay the tax in all of 1 year. So we were able to do a conversion and pay the tax over 2 years. So it basically added that income to our taxable income spread over 2 years instead of just the 1 year. That's the typical case. And then we knew that 5 years later, we would have access to that because anytime you do a Roth conversion, you have access to money that has been converted after it is aged for 5 years. And the way the Roth distributions work is the first money that comes out are your contributions. So for each of us, it would have been $40,000. Had we withdrawn that in total, each of us, we would then have access to the money that was converted in 2010, in 2015. And it's only the amount that was converted, not any earnings on the conversions. And then we also did some conversions in 2014, 2016, and 2018. We would have access to those each 5 years later. So in 2019, 2021, and 2023. So we were building what is called a Roth conversion ladder. We weren't doing it consistently because we weren't really aware that that's what we were doing, I guess you would say. We knew that we were doing these conversions and we would have the benefit of having access to it 5 years down the road, but we weren't thinking of it in terms of a specific plan of doing a conversion each year so that 5 years later you would have access. So the way you can be more proactive than we were is you can decide, hey, I want to build a ladder of access to conversions from my Roth IRA. So of course you would dip into your contributions first. And once those are exhausted, you would have access to your conversions. So you could do one each year and then 5 years later have access. So let's say we did one in 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14. Then in 2015, 16, 17, 18, and 19, we would have access to those funds. And if you kept doing it each year, you basically would create this perpetual ladder that you could access with conversions that were from 5 years prior. So that's a great option. And I will put a link in the show notes. The Mad Scientist has written about this and is pretty well known for bringing this to light to many people. So I will look for the blog post that he wrote on this and put that in the show notes. The other option we were conscious of is something called the Rule of 55. And the Rule of 55 works like this. If your 401k or 401a, my wife's situation, allows for it. Hers did. Mine also did, but it didn't apply to me. But if you separate from service in the year you turn 55 or later, and your plan allows for it, you could have access to the money in that employer's plan and only that employer's plan at age 55 or later without penalty. So basically you get to jump ahead of the 59.5 10% penalty. But again, it's only for funds in that employer's plan if that employer allows it, and it has to stay in that account. You can't roll it out to an IRA, for example, and have that rule follow. It won't work that way. If you roll the money to an IRA, that rule of 55 goes away. So you would need to leave the money in that 401k or 401a in her situation to have access to it without penalty. And so that is an additional decision you need to make, because if it's not a great plan, maybe that's not a great choice. But her plan was a decent plan, and that was also an idea. And that would have been in the year 2019 for her, which would have been my fourth year of retirement. So we were building access to all of these different kind of levers to be able to get money from some accounts that typically would have had some restrictions to them. And then another option is something called the 72T SEPP, which stands for Substantially Equal Periodic Payments. It's something we never looked into because we felt we had plenty of other options for access. And it's something I had read about previously, I was familiar with, but I personally felt like it had too many restrictions and there was the possibility of making a mistake and causing the plan where the distributions are coming from to potentially be fully taxed. And we will talk about this in an interview that Amberly Grant and I did with Eric Cooper on the FinTalks cruise. So this is one of the interviews we did on the cruise. I've published a previous interview we did with a number of other people on the cruise, and I held this one back because I thought it would be a good opportunity to publish that along with this episode. And we talk specifically about the 72T, and Eric has implemented this for himself. In fact, he's done it to create his own fun bucket. And I think that's just really neat that he did that. You will hear that at the end of this episode. And that is another option. Now, going back to our situation, I would turn 59 and a half in April of 2025, so a year from now, and I will have full access to my accounts. My wife, had she survived, if you don't know, she passed away from cancer in 2021, but she would have turned 59 and a half in October of 2023. So we would have had full access to all of her accounts in October of 2023. So that's really an 8-year window that we needed to create cash flow for before one of us turned 59 and a half and we had access to at least one of our accounts. Since she has passed away, her accounts have become inherited IRAs for me, and inherited accounts do not have a penalty. When she passed away and those accounts were turned into inherited accounts, an inherited IRA, an inherited Roth IRA, I no longer had the issue of accessing those accounts prior to age 59 and a half without penalty. So that's something to be aware of. If you have any inherited IRAs or 401ks, you will not have the 10% penalty issue. If you're married to somebody and you inherit an IRA or 401k, you can combine it to your own IRA, for example, your own Roth, your own traditional IRA. Now, I chose not to do that, and here's why. So this is something to be aware of. If your spouse passes away before age 59 and a half or your age 59 and a half, it's advantageous not to combine that account with your own, because had I combined her IRA into my IRA, whether it be traditional or Roth, then my age is what would apply, and I would not have access to those funds prior to age 59 and a half without that penalty. So I chose to keep those accounts as inherited IRAs, because I have full access to those accounts without penalty. And then once I turn 59 and a half, I will go ahead and combine it with my own, and they will act as my own IRAs from that point forward. And the reason I would want to do that is because she was older than me by a year and a half. If I kept them as inherited IRAs, I would have to start the required minimum distributions on those accounts that are the inherited IRAs when she would have had to turn on her required minimum distributions at age 75 now would be. But since I'm younger, I'd rather combine them with my own account so that I still have to have required minimum distributions from them at my age 75, but that's a year and a half after she would have turned age 75. So advantageous to keep those separate until my age 59 and a half and then combine them with my own, because then the required minimum distribution will start at my age, which is later than it would have started at her age. So with that, I would like to move to the interview with Eric on the FinTalks cruise that we recorded in January, and we talk about the last option of accessing your retirement accounts prior to age 59 and a half without penalty, and that is the 72T SEPP, Substantially Equal Periodic Payments option. my question was, I know, and I'd like to get into this a little bit about the concept of the fun bucket, which I would be curious as to where you heard about it and also how you have implemented that and the reasoning for doing that. Was there an issue with being able to spend the money? Was there access or a combination of both? Or I'm very interested to hear how you've utilized the 72T or substantially equal payment process.
You know, I was nervous about the 72T. It was always part of my plan when I went into early retirement. I talked with Fidelity about it. They were okay with it. Then I came to Camp Fi and I talked to a couple people. And I think we had that big group breakout on drawdown strategies. And I mentioned 72T in that. And everybody looked at me like I had three eyes. Why would you do that? It's so restrictive. If you make a mistake, you'll have to pay all the penalties. I kind of want to know, why does everybody hate the 72T so much in this community? What's wrong with it?
Well, I think people are concerned about making an error and blowing up the IRA such that the entire IRA would have to be considered a distribution. Mm-hmm. I know you can break apart your IRA, and I'm curious as to whether you did that or if you did it with the entire IRA. And also curious as to the custodian's opinion, approach, what have you, about helping you set that up. And it sounds like it was at Fidelity, is that
correct?
Yes,
that is correct. It's at Fidelity.
And so tell us a little bit about that process.
Well, I was really nervous about it going into the whole setup. I kind of put it on the back burner. I wanted to wait and see how my finances were the first year, and everything worked great. I didn't touch a dime of my money that I had saved up in my 401k or any of my brokerage accounts, or I lived on my rental property income, and it was fine. It was perfect. I was able to travel, live comfortably. I wasn't wanting for anything necessarily. But I also knew after attending Camp Fi that I was going to have required minimum distributions that would hit when I would turn 72 plus, and they would be substantial. And I think you and I discussed that. That's a problem that you were going to have and a few other people in the community. And I wasn't aware of that until Camp Fi. So after hearing that made me want to do the drawdowns immediately and start pulling money out of my 401k so that I don't have as much in there. And it just seems a little less cumbersome than doing the Roth conversions, the Roth ladder conversions. It just seems very simple. It's you do it once and you take your distributions until you're 59 and a half.
Right. And the advantage is obviously you don't have to wait the 5 years after the first conversion and so forth to access it.
And I'm in a low tax bracket right now. So why not enjoy that money while I'm young enough to enjoy it?
Yeah.
And take a little cream off the top.
Yeah. And so if people aren't aware that you need to set up it's like annuitizing a portion of your IRA, and it has to come out for at least 5 years or until you're 59 and a half, whichever is longer. So in your case, that's approximately going to be a 10-year window that you're going to be required to take out the equal payments each year, whether you want to or not, effectively. Right. And I think that's where people are of the opinion that it handcuffs you to that strategy that you can't change. Now, it sounds like you're doing it just for kind of fun money.
Yeah. Correct? So as I was saying, I wanted to wait until I got a good grasp on what my income was. And I also have the ACA subsidy. So that has to factor into it as well. I don't want to bust it and then have to pay a ton in healthcare. So after 2 years of having a good idea of what my finances looked like and how much money I was going to make every year, I felt comfortable doing a $20,000 distribution each year. So how I did that is I moved $300,000 from my 401k into a regular IRA. So the IRA is then just a portion of what the 401k was. The $300,000 takes a $20,000 distribution each year. I was a little nervous about it, but at the same time, it's like, why not enjoy the money? It's there. I want a fun bucket, which I heard from you, of course, Mark, your coined phrase of the fun bucket. And then I started hearing you talk about the things you were doing with your fun bucket and Carl Jensen having concerts and just really enjoying life and doing things and being able to splurge a little bit on friends. And it just was really appealing to be able to share that.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to fund it for sure. And I appreciate you coming on and explaining that. It sounds like you went in with your eyes wide open.
Absolutely.
You talked to the custodian. You set it up with only that portion that needed to fund it. It's not like the entire IRA was turned into this. And you understand what your income is, your expenses. And it sounds like, in essence, this is the first layer that will always be there that you can't turn off. And you're comfortable with that always being that first layer, no matter what other income gets stacked on top. So yeah, I appreciate that. Because I think, like you said, a lot of people are scared of it. And sometimes I just look at things and say, we should listen to things that don't make sense to us, or you've heard and you should never do that. And there are many situations where it certainly can work. So I appreciate you coming on and talking about that.
I feel like people like myself who do the 72T in this community are guinea pigs. There's not a lot of us who've done it yet.
Well, thank you for being a guinea pig.
My pleasure. But I want to thank Jolene and Darren Unland, who were kind of the guinea pig before me. They put together their plan to do their 72T. And I talked with them at Camp Fi, Colorado last year. And the next month, they finalized their 72T and took the distribution. And they did a great, great blog. Their website, I'm going to find what it is real quick here, because a lot of people will probably have questions about it. But their blog was terrific. It's called Dare to Draw Down. So if you want to check out
the write-up. I'll definitely have to check that out.
Dare to Draw Down. Jolene outlined their experience and the process of working with Fidelity. Theirs went a little smoother than mine, but it really helped me. And they were a phone call away. They went through it. I called them in a panic on December 21st because it was getting toward the end of the year. I still didn't have my paperwork in place. Fidelity, my dude was on vacation and he passed me off to somebody else. Then they gave me the wrong paperwork. And it didn't look right.
So probably don't wait till December 21st to put this into place. Okay.
And I did start in November, in my defense. Oh, okay. But then I went to Egypt for 11 or 12 days and got back. It was just a snowball going into the holidays. But yes, don't wait.
And so this 2024 is your first year, or 2023?
2023, yeah. Okay. So on December 29th, the $20,000 distribution hit my checking account, and that was a nice day. I had such a big smile on my face because that's my first drawdown. Yeah. It's like, this is real.
So we'll have to check in with you 5 or so years down the road and get an update.
Yeah. I have one question for you. What is one unexpected thing you've bought? It's only been like 29 days since you've really gotten it. But what is one unexpected thing that you bought with that money that you might not have had that money not been in its own bucket?
That's a good question. You know, I've been very free about going on vacations. Like I planned this trip with you guys. I'm going to Bali. Amy Minkley's Fi Getaway in Bali, the retreat. And also, like last night, we went out dancing until 3 o'clock and I bought drinks for everybody and it was fun.
Oh, I love that.
How fun is that? Yeah. To be able to just say, hey, let's go have a great time.
That's great. Yeah,
so I'm really groggy and tired. So bear with me here, but
doing a great job. Well, thanks so much for joining us today.
Absolutely.
And taking some time from your cruise to chat.
Well, yes. I'm going to go back to cruising. Yeah. This is too much fun.
Well, thank you, Eric. Thanks for doing it. Like I said, we'll have to have you on again.
Amberly, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name, or let me know if you would like to remain anonymous, and also your state of residence if you choose. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next week on the Mark's Money Mind show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. And now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.